special guest, Mr. Dean Gotcher of the Institution for Authority Research in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mr. Gotcher is trained in education and European history and philosophy, and as a result, he's been researching what are the forces behind the current trends in education. His statement is, I've read over 600 books from the men who've designed the theories, primarily social psychologists, that have changed education. My main focus has been on Bloom's taxonomies, that's cognitive and affective, which are used today to train teachers. I followed the trail of authors used by Bloom and focused primarily on the dialectic process originally offered by Hegel and later used by Marx. My belief is that the main goal of these theories is to destroy any overt position of authority, especially parental authority. The main reason I founded the Institution for Authority Research is to counter this subversive effort to destroy godly authority. As a Christian, I believe the Word of God has much to say to us today regarding the subject of authority and of the education of children. Dean, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you so very much for being with us and for sharing the evening as we begin to talk a little bit about the forces behind those people that are intent upon changing the status of education in the United States. Now, what are the differences between traditional and transformational ways of thinking?
Well, traditional can be summed up with the verb is, and transformational with the word potential. And traditional society is very facts-based. The teacher's taught to facts. You're taught what is right and what is wrong. You'll notice the verb is all the time, 2 + 2 = 4. And so there are some preset standards, whether the laws of nature or moral standards, that were predetermined by the parents or the community, and the children, the next generation, were taught to those principles or their standards. And accountability was always to a higher authority, and that higher authority was always external, that carries the principles that this nation was founded upon, the patriarch, they call it, structure of thought, children are accountable to parents, and the worker to the boss, and man to God. But we've decided that's not the way to think anymore. We've moved through transition, which is, backing up just a moment, if you deal with Bloom's taxonomies, but you have to be careful when you deal with his cognitive or facts taxonomy, because he's defined cognitive or facts to be relative. In other words, his truth will always fit in a transformational world, so you couldn't use his definition for facts that would fit into a traditional. It would always fit in transformational. So then you go from this traditional structure of accountability to a higher authority through transition, where accountability is to yourself. And so that would correlate to the affective domain. In other words, I feel like doing it different than you've told me what is. And if you carry that all the way through your life, you'll have anarchy, rebellion, spontaneity. So the affective domains or affection deals with that. Probably the best phrase to sum that up is I ought to be able to.
Well, now, Dean, why don't you explain to our listeners who Bloom is and why Bloom is important when we talk about education? Because to the average listener out there, they're not acquainted with the author of so much of the havoc that's come into education. Who was Bloom? What was his objective and goal?
Well, Bloom was a social psychologist.
What was his first name?
Benjamin Bloom.
Benjamin Bloom, and where did he work?
I don't know particularly his area.
Where was he? Was he a teacher?
No, he's a social psychologist, a social scientist, we'll put it that way, who worked with others to develop a taxonomy. They called his works Bloom's taxonomies, although they recognized they're not, but that fits the agenda that they were intending to do, which was to structure how we think. And, of course, that is always to produce this transformational society. So they worded, in the meetings I present, I'm traveling all over the country, spending sometimes up to 3 hours able to explain the dialectic. What they had to do was define a transformational society in such a way that it would be accepted into any environment it went into. In other words, had to write it in a way that it would not offend the traditional-minded person. They would not be able to discern the structure of change that was just about to happen to them.
All right, fine. Now, how long ago was Dr. Bloom involved in pushing this idea? Is this something fairly current? Is this something from a generation, two generations ago?
Well, his ideas came with John Dewey, who pushed progressivism.
All right, that's the 1930s, 1940s
right.
era. And
right,
so he and Dewey were working together.
No. He picked up on Dewey's structure, but Dewey could not get the process across traditional America very successfully. So what was required was an environment, and that environment came here with several social psychologists from Europe in the 30s. And 20s also is J.L. Moreno, who came here with a method role-playing, psychodrama, social drama. You role-playing yourself in a given situation or role-playing somebody else in a situation.
Are ideas of situational ethics or what they're doing in schools, where they're teaching them this valueless education, educational values?
Right.
Is that sort of what it comes out, where you imagine
sure.
that you're in a lifeboat and there are 10 people and only 6 places, and who's going to get thrown out? Is that sort of...
Lawrence Kohlberg's dilemma, life dilemma. Sure. Always breaking a rule, finding out whether you're facts-oriented towards law or feelings-oriented towards justice, where you're willing to compromise. But the agenda is to... You can grade people on their morals. Are they very facts-based people? In other words, 2 + 2 = 4. Well, that tells you that's a traditional-minded person. They're not readily adaptable to change.
Well, hey, obviously they haven't been trained in math standards or in math land, because there it really doesn't matter what 2 and 2 is, and that's actually what they're doing in classrooms all across California
that's
today.
Right. That's right.
And where they're talking not about what 2 and 2 is, but how do you feel about 2 and 2?
It's called fuzzy math.
Well, it's called
I call it
diabolical math, because it is designed to dumb down children, and yet most parents have no idea what they're doing to their kids.
That's right. All, even Christian colleges and universities, anyone that even, not just the state, receives any federal assistance, they're being grounded on Bloom's taxonomy. Now, on page 32 of his cognitive domain, he writes, "We recognize the point of view that truth and knowledge are only relative, and that there are no hard and fast truths which exist for all times and all places." Well, you can see you're going to have some problems with 2 + 2 = 4 with that structure of thought. Only those facts, like John Dewey, only those facts that are relevant for the sake of the group solving a social problem, those are the facts that are important. Anybody who stands off to the side and says, well, it is written, or it is a fact that offends the group, that prevents the group from functioning as a team-building group, that person's labeled as a negative person. They're preventing group building for the sake of social harmony.
And of course, doesn't much of this whole concept of education emphasize the group rather than the individual?
Sure.
In other words, we don't want everybody understanding math. We want the group to come up with an answer.
That's right. That's the ultimate agenda, is the common sense relationship with society, no longer somebody coming in saying, well, I know. Because, see, somebody who's dealing with 2 + 2 = 4, I know it's 4. Well, that's a rigid attitude. You come into a diverse group of people who some people think, well, it might be 5 or 7. Well, if I keep coming in with, I know it's 4, and not only expected of me, but expected of others, I might hurt their feelings. We might not be able to work together. And so, therefore, I need to be willing to back off and put that to the side and see if the group, if we can all work this thing out. Hopefully, we might come up with 4. But if we don't, as long as we're not going to build anything with real world, because we're doing role-playing, nobody's going to get hurt, they think, the end result is group harmony. We've come to consensus. We can all feel good about the decision that we as a group have made.
Well, Dean, of course, you and I recognize that this leads to nothing but chaos. So what is the real motive behind this? Because these people don't believe that, because if they took that attitude, they never would have been able to accomplish what they have. They obviously have an organized, orchestrated goal in mind. What is their goal?
Well, there are 10 regional training labs across this nation. They all have different aspects of this process. The agenda is to socialize the world. We have such diversity in the world. They looked at all the diversity and they said, there's no way we're going to get these group of people, these people together, for the sake of social harmony if they're all so loyal to I'm right and you're wrong. In other words, I've got the facts and you don't, and so you're wrong and I'm right. Well, what we need to do is get everybody with their point of view in a room, have them put aside their differences, focus on what we can all accept, come to social harmony. And so these exercises, whether in the classroom with transformational outcome-based education or in the workplace with total quality management or in the political realm with schoolwork, they're all the identically same process, same structure, same dialectic process, same values clarification. And if you go back to the 50s, you'll come across a book entitled Human Relations in Curriculum Change, edited by Kipnay, that lays out the whole structure of behavior change.
Who actually wrote that?
Well, the editor is Kenneth Benet.
Kenneth Benet.
Benet, B-E-N-N-E. Human Relations in Curriculum Change. It's not in print. You'll probably have to do an interlibrary loan. But it has Kurt Lewin's, J.L. Moreno's results, who's who of the original workers of this process to restructure society. The first national training lab out of Bethel, Maine, started in 1947. This is the third year of its results. NEA worked with this process. Tavistock out of London. And it actually shows you how to change the belief and values. This, I'm talking beliefs and values. That's what they say in the book. How to change the belief and values of children.
All right,
how to
fine.
Change the belief and values of teachers. Another exercise, how to change the belief and values of school administrators.
All right, fine. Now, for the listener who doesn't know what Tavistock is, it is a British think tank, really, how you can distort reality, how you can control the mind of the people. It's an extension of British intelligence and, of course, the Anglo-British establishment that really is intent upon mind control. And it,
right.
They are really engineers who will determine how society can be controlled by the ruling elite. That's Tavistock, and we have comparable CIA think tanks here in the United States. Okay, pick it up from there.
Right. And
so I think our listeners have to understand who's really behind this. Now, do you have any idea what part the great foundations played in funding this whole movement towards restructuring society?
I would imagine even a lot of innocent foundations, because this process covers itself with issues you and I would agree with. We jump right on the bandwagon and say, yeah, here's our money. We have social problems. Let's go out there and solve them. Not knowing that our money would be used to actually turn around and restructure how our own children thought and ourselves in the workplace or in the political realm. Danger of this whole thing is it comes in, gives you the impression you have control. And only too late, if you ever wake up, do you realize that you don't. Unfortunately, a lot of people are seduced into the process because, as Carl Rogers and Maslow and Dr. William Coulson realized, they became intoxicated with it. They found they could go into a group of people and control them, have them in their hands because of these behavior modification tools. They could control not only the classrooms, but communities, and the agenda is to control the world. But it's the same structure, and that's why in meetings I explain the structure, the dialectic. I explain the environment, praxis. Praxis, nothing wrong with the word. It just simply means we're going to act out or manifest. So we're not going to study anymore the dialectic. We're going to manifest it. We're going to get into a diverse groups of people. We're going to dialogue to consensus, which means we're all going to feel good about the outcome. We're going to come down to a level that everybody can accept. In a over a social issue, it has to be a social issue, and there are a lot of those to have to deal with now. Even in the classroom, we have now sex, crime, and drugs, all kinds of things for the kids to get in their little circles and do the team building. And always have to have a facilitator there. People don't realize teachers teach facts, facilitators process. And a facilitator is a social psychologist. And so what we're having is teachers move from their traditional teaching facts, taken into this process, get in a little group themselves, inculcate this process, habitualize it, and then go in the classroom and get the kids in the circle and replicate what they've been processed with in teacher training or in service training. And the end agenda is, therefore, the next generation will not be able to function on their own, cannot think on their own. They're always cognizant of the group. What will the group think? You know, anything I do, what will society think? So eventually, your child will pick up a pop can, not thinking about what he can, you know, sell that and get for himself or for his mom or dad or for his community. It'll be for the globe, you know, Mother Earth. He's going to pick that can up for this, and he's going to be thinking, I wonder what the Earth thinks, you know. And the world view, by the way, used to, back up just a moment, your world view is set usually by the age of 12. And what we used to do in the public schools was we would teach national history up to the age of 12 and then world history after the age of 12, so the child had sovereignty, patriotism in his mind. But now we've gone to environmentalism, pre-kindergarten, all the way up. So the children are being processed for the globe. Cosmic oneness, you know, bonding with the, what I call cosmic bound, or bound within the cosmos, no longer thinking about just themselves or their family or their community, but on a global scale. And that's what this process is doing, taking the kids and putting them in a diverse group. You always have to have the diverse group. Because if you have everybody with the same facts, they're not going to go anywhere. We call that common faith. And so you always have to make sure there's somebody there that thinks different than you, and therefore it forces you to put aside your I know my facts are right, which may conflict with the other person, which therefore they're wrong. And so the facilitator's role is always to move you from I know over to I think and I feel.
All right. Now, how does all of this relate to OBE, TQM, STW, and Goals 2000?
Well, they're all the same structure. One, transformational outcome-based education is preparing a transformational mind for the workplace, or a dialectic mind, or a values clarification mind for the workplace. Total quality management is preparing a dialectic or a transformational workplace for that mind, and school to work is producing a dialectic or transformational legal system. Those who make decisions, those in authority in the political realm, are always getting little groups now, dialoguing to consensus over social issues, and have to have that expert there, that facilitator, which means, by the way, we don't do this naturally. We bicker over our facts that support our position. We don't like putting our facts aside for anybody else because that's our security. But this process forces everybody to put aside loyalty to what is, to them, for the sake of the group.
Well, and, but Dane, now the problem with this is that nobody is going to be a real leader in this situation, and society can't exist without leaders. So where are the elite going to come from? Where are the rulers going to come from?
Well, actually, this is Plato's dream, the philosopher king. The philosophers, the departments of health, education, welfare, and labor, with social psychologists at the helm, are going to, and they've created these laws, the education reform bill and the workplace and the political arena. It's all been processed from these departments and with social psychologists at the helm. People need to realize when you send your elected official who you vote for, you vote for their position and their facts. You hope they have a live and well conscience, because if they move away from their facts they told you, it'll bother their conscience, too. If they go into consensus, you know, that means they must be willing to put aside facts that they hold that are offensive to somebody else. Well, the facilitator talks them into putting that fact aside so we can all collectively solve this problem. And if your elected official does that, those facts that he went in that he has to put aside for the sake of the group is your representation.
But you see,
and so in consensus, we don't have representation. There never has been, and there never will be, representation in consensus.
But, Dean, the thing is that the facilitator has to be able to think. The facilitator has an objective and goal. And
sure.
When he brings the group together and brings them into consensus, he's just manipulating all those people.
That's
but the
right.
facilitator, of course, doesn't believe any of this. He knows that he is there manipulate the group. He understands that consensus has nothing to do with group thought, rather has to do with group molding and, if necessary, just simply cheating on what the result is. So the facilitator is not a victim of this same group think that everybody else is. How do we choose the facilitators out of this system?
Well, what we need to do is make sure we get our elected officials, if we're doing the political realm, back to the rules according to Roberts. Quit breaking off in these little groups and getting Delphi'd, where your representative or person you voted for is put in a diverse group of people, and all of a sudden you find that those facts you voted for really aren't that important anymore. He's going to change for the sake of the facilitator's agenda. We just have to get rid of consensus. Our agenda needs to get back to the rules according to Roberts. They can be messed up. You can have a chairman there who just really makes life miserable for everybody. But if you have a person with integrity willing to use the rules as they're intended, and we can go back to a constitutional republic that we were framed and founded as and get away from this process. But it's going to take a person of great courage, because the community has been so processed itself, media and departments, whether it's even the military or police, because they've all been pulled into this process too. Same structure. They're going to harangue any politician who stands up and says, no, folks, we need to get back to bickering over what you believe is right and wrong. Let's have majority rule again and bicker over what is right and wrong that the community decides, rather than having these social psychologists trained in these regional training labs coming in and controlling your life. See what the change agent organizations, the training labs did back in the 50s and 60s. They worked out the environment they wanted to produce first. Then they worked up what are the answers that will always produce this outcome. Then they worked up what are the questions that will always produce these answers. It's called syllogism. You work backwards. And then what is the environment that always guarantees these questions, which therefore always produce these answers, which therefore produce this outcome? I can't answer their questions. Their questions are worded in such a way that if I answer them, I will always come up with their outcome. And that's what the training labs did in the 60s and 70s and 80s, was worked out the environment that would coerce the people who were participating, the task force members, to respond in relationship-oriented answers, which would always justify the social outcome that was already predetermined by the facilitators, but the community had no idea what was going to happen to them.
Yeah, well, what you're basically saying is they're playing games with the people. They get them together. They say, we want your input, and, of course, these are the rules that we're going to operate under, and the outcome is always predetermined by the ruling elite, as it were. And that's basically, of course, what Plato really wanted, was a ruling elite that would control the masses, because he believed that democracy didn't work, and I think actually he was probably entirely right. That's why our society was created as a republic. But do you actually recognize the fact that Plato and Socrates, who were talking about these things 2,500 years ago, of course got many of their ideas from the ancient mystery religions?
Right, and in fact, if you go to the contemporary folks, like J.L. Moreno, he said he went to the mystic religions, and that he found his God theory, his dialectic God theory, from them.
And really, that's what it's all about. And probably one of the great revelations for me was reading Albert Pike in Morals and Dogma, where he tells us that Plato and Socrates were privy to the ancient mysteries. And of course, our philosophy of today, our philosophers today, found their ideas, much of them on the writings of Plato, without realizing that in turn they are founding their philosophies on the ancient mysteries.
Right. And Aristotle plays a part in this too, because
certainly
Aristotle said truth comes from within. And so the agenda is to deliver that truth from within, remove all the restraining forces, the cannots and must nots and will nots and thou shalt nots, that parents and society inflict on the next generation so they can't think for themselves, and allow this divine spark to deliver itself back to the cosmic oneness. You know, you can get into all the mystic guru language. It's even found in total quality management. And America didn't really have the foggiest idea. These folks came in, trust us, we're experts, we're here to help you. Listening to the audience may have been your own kids. You send them off to college in the age of 21, they know more about how you should raise your family, how you should run your business, and how you should vote than you do, because, you vote principle, you vote on your conscience. But you have to realize, in a transformational society, you don't vote principle, you don't even vote your conscience, you vote your whoever can justify why you should have the right to feel the way you do. And so we haven't voted our conscience for a long time. And this process didn't just happen overnight. It's been decades coming, and we're just, since the 90s, beginning of the 90s, we have just seen it fully manifest itself. And the year 2000 is real. They really do believe this thing has to be closed. And by the way, School of Work is the capstone of it all. Once School of Work is in, the general public can scream and holler and ramp and rave all they want. I've got one word for them: tough. It's a done deal, and because that's the legal system. You know, the German people complained after Hitler got in power. They realized what they had done, but by the time they swore their oath to a man, it was a done deal.
Amen to that. Well, I think I'm going to open up the lines here at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, you agree, you disagree, give us a call. That's 464-8295 or out across America, if you're listening to us, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Because what Dean is talking about, of course, is seminal to an understanding of what has happened to our educational system, what is happening in our political system, what is happening in jobs today all across America. In fact, I even saw this done recently at a hospital meeting when we were trying to decide whether or not we were going to close down Community Hospital after it had been bought by Dominican Hospital. They brought the facilitator in, and they set down certain provisos. In other words, well, the hospital will not have an emergency room, have to have a surgery, and now what should we do with it? Well, they had already decided what we were going to do with it. It was no longer going to function as a hospital, but by putting in certain stipulations, it couldn't have an emergency room. They had effectively done away with the very structure of the hospital. Let's go to Jeanette. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. You have a question or comment?
Well, I have a comment, actually. I attended one of our local school board meetings this week, and there's now a Monterey Bay partnership between three high schools in this area, and their first year benchmark is to have youth to work program, career pathways, a career center, joint program with local businesses, staff development, academies, and a website for the local colleges, and I have people from these colleges come here and participate more in the schools. Does that sound like we could be involved here with School to Work? I know that it does. I mean, I know that that's what they are doing here.
I'm sure they are. And they're going ahead and implementing these things,
exactly.
Even though that they have not been passed by Congress as such.
Yeah, what they did with this was to receive a state grant for $800,000.
Sure. Well, Pete Wilson's, of course, putting the money up, certainly circumventing the legislature.
Yes.
Because, as Aristotle pointed out, how important it was to control the mind of the youth if you wanted to remake society. Hang on, Jeanette, we're going to have to take a break here.
Okay.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the point of our program where we have to remind you that we are listener-supported, and if you agree with our message and think it needs to be gotten out across the country, we'd love to hear from you. As you know, our address is Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. That's Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. Our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we're at war. The very structure of our Judeo-Christian concepts of society are under attack by today by those who would undermine the concept of right and wrong and God and replace it with this fuzzy thinking, which means that people, you know, can just sort of drift through life totally regulated and controlled by the ruling hierarchy. And, of course, our message is people have to understand that behind the forces intent upon destroying the concepts of right and wrong are dark and sinister spiritual forces which date back to the ancient mystery religions of antiquity. And until people understand that these are not imaginary things, these are actually taking place, they're deliberately dumbing down our children, and the people who are doing it know exactly what they're doing. They certainly have no respect for concepts of right and wrong or representative government. They have an agenda, and they intend to carry it out no matter how many millions or billions of people are destroyed in the process, because we're dealing with people who have a different perspective of the value of human life. And human existence. So if you believe that we have a message that's important here, why, we'd love to hear from you. And, of course, for a gift of $20 or more a month, why, we'll send you the four best tapes of the month, or we'll send you a book if you want, one of the books we have in stock, of course. But we want you to help us get the information out. We can only reach so many people, even though this program you're listening to tonight can be heard throughout the world on the World Wide Net. And, of course, it will be rebroadcast in the East probably next week, and it's being broadcast here in the Monterey Bay area this evening. But you can help us by copying our programs, or if you so see fit, why, you can buy our four tape sets on various subjects and copy those tapes and help us to get the message out across America. Whether America survives as a free society really is dependent upon the people who out there and how much they value their freedom. But let me warn you that when freedom is lost, why, life has very little meaning. And so we'll be back in just a moment with our special guest this evening. And if you'd like to give us a call, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Dr. Stan back here on Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dean Gotcher. And Dean lives in Oklahoma. And, of course, he heads an institute. It's called the Institution for Authority Research. And on the line here we have Jeanette. Jeanette, did you have another question or comment?
Well, I have a comment. I appreciate your program because I was, this evening because I was reflecting back about 15 years ago when I was taking classes to be a therapist. And the more classes I took, the more uneasy I felt in that I was being trained to be a change artist.
Now, you were talking to be a psychotherapist?
Yes. Well, marriage, family, child.
Right, okay.
But I felt like I was being more trained to, more to be a change artist rather than a real therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And making everything okay that people did and also guiding people along a certain way just by how I worked with them.
You mean you're okay, I'm okay.
Right, yes, and in hearing your program tonight, I'm even more aware of how people are being trained to, I got distracted with my animals, being trained to follow a certain path and following the, rather than following their own natural path.
Amen.
I really appreciate your program. I think a lot of these therapists today are very controlling in a very subtle way.
Certainly. What do you think about that, Dean? Do you think that this extends over into psychology as well? Dean? Dean, did we lose you? Well, I think we maybe did. You hang on there. I'm going to just see if we can get Dean back on the line. Okay, fine. And we lost Jeanette and we lost Dean and Jeanette, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, fine. Well, at least we've got you, and we're going to try to get Dean back on the line. So, but basically, I'm sure you're absolutely right. This permeates into every aspect of our life.
Yes.
But you know, the common denominator behind this is the fact that there is no God. There is no absolute. There is no right. There is no wrong. And once you remove that from society, why, of course, you have destroyed the very foundation upon which society is built, and especially in America, because in America, our concepts of freedom came from the fact that there was a God. And if you take the concept of a God out of out of society, then what is there left? Well, all you have is a ruler of some sort to mediate between people. If people that cannot rely upon God or turn to God as their source of authority, then, of course, the authority will be the king. And, of course, that goes back to the writings of a man named Samuel Rutherford, who was a French, was a Scotch minister, and he wrote a book called Lex Rex, which says the law is king. Lex, the law is king, rather than the tradition, which was the king was law. But Lex Rex, the law was king, and people would be subject to the law. But, of course, it was God's law, and that was the important part of it. Well, we've lost Jeanette, but we've got Dean back on the line. How did we happen to lose you?
I don't know. I could hear you, but I couldn't get back to you.
So okay,
I don't know
fine.
What happened,
well, I'm sorry. Anyway, we've got you back on the line here, and we maybe Jeanette will call back, or our telephone number here, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, why we would love to hear from you. Now, how do these processes affect the workplace?
Well, the workplace, well, it's going to restructure how people function. You're no longer going to be alone by yourself at work where you can have your own mind. You're going to have to be a team builder. You're going to have to be willing to be a partner with your workers. That's the word that she used, was partnership. People need to realize you don't go into partnership just because somebody says we should be in partnership. God's not in partnership with us. The scripture says, come let us reason together. I've got news for you who's going to be doing the changing, and it's not God. He's already got his facts and his position all figured out. I'm the one who's got to be doing the changing. When you have husband and wife, who, by the way, God has never put in a partnership arena, it's accountability. Husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church, lest your prayers not be answered. And I contend it's a nightmare for a wife to submit to a husband who doesn't love her because she has to live through his unanswered prayers. And children, obey your parents in the Lord. There's this top-down, again, a patriarchal structure that this nation was founded on, God, husband, wife, children. We're throwing that out. And we deserve, folks, everything we're getting, because when we throw that out, even though it sounds good, husband and wife become partners. The moment husband and wife become partners, you have the departments of health, education, welfare, and labor defining who they are, right smack dab between the two of them. And then if children go into partnership with their parents, and that's what all this training is about, parents as teachers, children being ready for school, it basically says that they've gone into this partnership mentality. Need to realize this is the scenario now. Your child comes home, you tell your child to do something, and your child has the right to turn around and say, no, I don't want to do that. I have my right. And you're going to go, what? You know, what right? Well, you need to dialogue with your child. That's partnership. You need to make sure they feel good about this decision you just made for them, and they need to come to agreement with you. That's partnership. And then, if you don't understand, you might reach out and grab that child, you know, to reinstate them to accountability to higher authority. Your child will jerk their hand away and say, don't you dare touch me. There's a social psychologist out there. There's a number I can call to have them come in and teach you how to be a partner with me.
And, you know, we see recently on local television these ads, this very authoritative-looking man saying, are you a victim of child abuse? You know, if you are a victim of child abuse, you call this number. And, of course, what they're doing is telling every child, you don't have to listen to your parents. If they want to tell you what to do, they're abusing you because you have your rights. And, of course, the tragedy is that they started very subtly, child sexual abuse. All this child sexual abuse. Well, I'm sure that there is some of it out there, but they certainly exaggerated. And then from there, child abuse was beating your child. And then child abuse was paddling your child. And then child abuse was shaking your child. And then child abuse was touching your child, and then child abuse became disagreeing with your child, and step by step by step by step, they've undermined parental authority, and you're absolutely right, and people don't understand that this is part of a long-range process by those who hate God's plan for mankind, for family relationships, and want to replace that with the all-powerful state.
And the same thing in the workplace where the boss goes into partnership with the workers. That's total quality management. You've lost your business. Now you have departments of health, education, welfare, and labor defining who you are and where you're going. You can't just one day decide that you want to fire a bunch of people or do whatever you want. You don't, you know, hire whoever you want. You're somebody's going to be in there holding your hand, making sure you do things according to the departments of health, education, welfare, and labor. Now, the reason I mention these departments is that when you have the departments of health, education, welfare, and labor headed by social psychologists helping to shape your laws and then promote them and then enforce them, so you see folks, the police force with the DARE program are into social psychology. They're into facilitating those departments. Now, the police are responsible to those departments, not to use the citizen, but to those departments. When you have your laws created, promoted, and enforced by the departments of health, education, welfare, and labor, you are under the Politburo system. We have been for the last 7 years under the Soviet form of government. In fact, a man by the name of Lawrence Kohlberg, George Lukács, I'll get the right name here, I knew that wasn't right, George Lukács, out of Russia, famous transformational Marxist, he says that any institution which facilitates between the public and the private sector, and that's all that's going on out here in this in our nation, is a Soviet. And so we have been switched over to a whole socialist, and that is global Soviet. It's not a national Soviet like Russia or China. It's a global structure. And so we've been pulled over into this structure, seduced into it, with all these task force meetings. Governors were actively involved in at the turn of this decade for the sake of society, restructuring our government. Because we moved from the rules according to Roberts to consensus, and the moment we did that, once we went into that process, we lost everything. We lost our rights. There is no sovereignty in consensus building. There are no inalienable rights. You just gave them all up. So when you vote for your elected official school board member and you go down and you watch them being facilitated in these meetings, you just gave up your rights.
Well, I think that most people really will find what you're saying is very, very difficult to believe. I mean, who would want to destroy America? I mean, we're such nice people. Who would want to take away our individual freedom? After all, Americans are entitled to freedom without realizing that when people allow their nation to turn away from God, then eventually God will turn away from those people.
That's
How
right.
does this whole process then fit in to the structure of our churches today?
Well, we have a lot of team building going on in the church. I took total quality management training in seminary, learned how to take surveys of the felt needs of the congregation. By the way, once a minister does that, he's just turned his face to man and his back to God. Ministers need to have their face to God and their back to men, leading like a shepherd leads, because the sheep see his hindsight, because he's going someplace, and if they want to follow, they'll follow, you know. And we've reversed the agenda. We've gotten into all kinds of social building processes for the sake of social harmony.
Well, now, how about men's and women's conferences? Are these utilized in churches to push some sort of a warm, fuzzy agenda?
Well, it's wreaking havoc wherever it goes. Anytime, even ministers, when they wake up and they see what national programs are doing, the moment they criticize, they're afraid of losing their congregation, because leadership is being trained in this process in the workplace, and they come into the church and tell the minister, "Now listen, we better be a team-building congregation here, or you're going to be looking for another job."
Okay, and of course, this carries over then into government and to workplace and church and family relations. They're all being changed. The relationships are being changed one to the other.
Right. The agenda is to bring every facet of society into this process. Nursing profession, psychodynamic nursing, holistic nursing, this is cradle to grave. This is lifelong learning. In fact, that came out of the UN, this very same process. Perkin and others worked on how to bring the world into this process of consensus building, of relationship building, putting aside our principles that get in the way of a diverse group of people so we can all, you know, get along with one another. And that sounds so good, but See, the consequence, if I have to put aside something I believe in, a cannot or a must not or will not, for the sake of the group, I'm going to have to justify my to my conscience later on that what I did was okay. I'm going to eventually sear my conscience. This is the same process that was used in Germany. Well, we're looking out here at a society with a seared conscience, and we're going, well, how did that happen? You know, blame the parents, blame somebody else. It's the process. Use this process, you're going to see your conscience. We looked at Germany before World War II. We said, that's an intelligent nation. After the war, we said, how in the world could such an intelligent nation do all those unconscionable things? Well, when I share this in meetings, I just look at the audience and say, is anybody home? We're doing the same rotten process, except social psychologists like Abraham Maslow and Carl Rogers thought they could do it more humanely. It's not working.
Well, I think that even Rogers, at the end of his life, realized it didn't work. And he, we've had Dr. Colson, who was
right.
Rogers' right-hand man, on with us a number of times. And Rogers actually, in his textbook, finally said, these things don't work. And then after he died, they republished the textbook, and they took out the part where he said, this doesn't work. I think he had second thoughts, because every place they went, they destroyed. They went into convents. Catholic convents, and brought these concepts to the nuns there, and pretty soon, within a year or two, while the nuns were renouncing their vows and going into lesbianism and witchcraft, and they were here at Kresge College here in Santa Cruz, UCSC, University of California in Santa Cruz, and they applied these to the students there. They just totally wiped out the whole Kresge College in a matter of a couple of years.
And see, folks, this is down into the kindergarten, preschool now.
Sure.
The thing with Rogers, he wrote in one of his later books, Pattern of Failure. Abraham Maslow wrote in his journal, you'd never find his journal in any psychology or sociology book, warning the next generation of teachers and managers that he had grave questions. He said, my children got me into conflict with my theory. I've been in continuous conflict ever since. Eventually, he warns you can't use it on developing the minds of the youth. It's being used today, develop the minds of the youth. The original founder, after he had his own children, realized this is dangerous stuff. But
well, of course, what they were doing was trying to treat normal people with psychological techniques that you would use for sick people.
That's right.
And what you did when you used psychological treatments for well people is you made them sick.
Right. And see, once you classify everybody as neurotic, and that's what Tavistock did after the war. They observed, shell-shocked people, and then they thought they evaluated what the cause for that, and then they looked at society and they said, wow, all of society is manifesting this neuroticism, so we need to rescue the world from this rigidity. And what they saw, this neuroticism coming from, was rigidity. You know, somebody who is structured in this is right and this is wrong, and they weren't adaptable to change. And so the agenda was to restructure how people think, so they're no longer tied down to some absolute moral structure. That's why situation ethics, that's why kids are in circles, a diverse group, social metrics, teachers are into that, and many administrators, making sure you always have a diverse group. Put aside those cannots. For the sake of the group, those cannots must not, because if you keep saying cannot, offend somebody else who thinks they can, you're going to sear your conscience. But that's okay. We're getting in a group, learning how to get along with one another. See, that's the agenda. Once we use the psychomotor instead of the conscience, the psychomotor can be processed. That part, by the way, anytime you take a test that says most agree, somewhat disagree, most disagree, somebody's checking in on your values. And that's dealing with shaping your psychomotor so you can be habitualized. They call it habitualization. So you can be an ever-changing person in any given situation. You know how to do it. You know how to train others to do it. And so you and I can, and everybody in the world can work across from one another. I won't inculcate you with what I believe, and you won't inculcate me with what you believe, because we've learned how to bring our beliefs down to a point of view where we can dialogue them away and find what we can accept in common for the sake of social harmony.
Amen.
And it's the destruction of everything this nation was founded on.
No question at all. And, of course, the great tragedy is most people have no idea what's going on out there. Now, this whole thing is an effort to destroy faith in God, isn't it? Isn't that the common denominator behind everything? Well, what you're really doing, then, is describing a vast conspiracy.
That's right. And it's interesting, when you go back to what Satan did to Eve in the garden, he was the first master facilitator. He used counseling uses neurolinguistics. It is a way, a phraseology that confuses your conscious mind, brings up your subconscious mind. So in the dialogue that follows, you're going to bring feeling, spontaneity. It's going to help you liberate you from that cannot, must not, will not, thou shalt not that a mom or dad or somebody else has told you. And that's the same sentence structure that Satan threw at Eve in the garden. She throws in a feeling word. That's where they came from. She was supposed to give a cognitive, facts-based definition. You know, don't eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. If you do, dying you'll die. But she threw in the word touch. Well, where's that come from? It comes from a neurolinguistic phrase responding to it. Then he says, you know, you can put that cannot aside that mom or dad or the nation gave you, because we have a diverse group here. If you keep holding to it, we can't function together, so you won't die. Well, let me tell you something. Any time a parent gave me a cannot, it was under penalty of death if I went past that cannot. There was accountability. But you see, in team building, you put aside those cannots. Do you realize we have no accountability out there anymore? You know, you go try and find somebody who's accountable for something, and it's always the group. Well, the reason is we're putting aside the cannots and must nots and will nots and thou shalt not that God has given us. People think the Ten Commandments were removed from the schoolhouse walls because of religious tolerance. No, you can't do this process with a cannot reminding the teachers and the students of accountability to a higher authority who isn't going to get into consensus and compromise his facts and his position for anybody. He's going to hold us accountable on the day of judgment. There's no group grade on the day of judgment. And when people come to me and say, well, let's agree to disagree, I just tell them to tell that to God on the day of judgment and see how far it's going to get them. They've got some problems when that day arrives, because God's not going to agree to disagree. He's already defined who we are, and we're accountable to his definition. I looked in scriptures to find out how tolerant, you know, how God would deal with the word tolerance, because I know he doesn't deal very well with imagination. Imagination of men's hearts are evil continually, and that's what we're using in the classroom, in the workplace, in the political realm. So I thought, well, tolerance. Maybe God's going to blast that too, but no. God's tolerant. He gives us up to 120 years to breathe, but folks, after that last breath, you'll never hear the word tolerance again.
Amen to that. I was just thinking as you were speaking, we took a trip to Israel not too long ago, and there in the city of Dan, which is in the northern part of the Holy Land, just south of the Lebanese border. And we went to this town, and of course just remnants of the town, but they were talking about there at the gates of the town, and if a father brought his son, and his son just refused under any circumstances to obey, then the members of the town authority, the elders, stoned that son to death. That's a pretty harsh way to do things, but they felt that if a totally recalcitrant child had to be destroyed, it would be something that would seep through the society. Well, of course, in Christianity, why, we certainly don't believe in doing things of that, but we do believe that children have to be punished if they do something wrong, otherwise they'll continue doing it. And of course, the serpent's message is, oh, don't punish the child, let him just make his decisions on his own. After all, he has the right to determine what indeed is right and wrong.
That's right, and the end result is like Piaget, famous Swiss psychologist, said, children didn't understand rules until they're 7 years old, so if you pushed rules on children before they got there, you're damaging your child. Well, what you're going to produce are unruly children, you know. But that's the kind of, see, all these social psychologists out there, whether they, I believe most of them have the foggiest idea of what they're doing. They just went to college and got a degree and went on up with it, And I really believe somewhere along the line they knew something was wrong, but after a while you become intoxicated with this process. That's what Colson and Rogers and Dr. William Colson, they became intoxicated. They had tremendous power over people. But I believe just a few really truly understand the evil nature of this and relish using the process. I want to mention one thing. This uses deceit. People are seduced into the process and then deceived and manipulated. I've read 600 social psychology books, the men who practice how to do this. And the Bible talks about those who are deceived and taking pleasure in deceiving others. We're seeing a manifestation. Anytime you put your child under a facilitator, even in a Christian school or Christian Sunday school or in a church, you're under the deception. And the only way out of this is if administrators, for instance, in the public schools would wake up. If they wake up to the fact that they've been seduced and deceived, they would come on radio or TV and say, folks, I have been seduced, and I want you to know that I've taken pleasure in seducing you and your children over the last number of years. Will you forgive me? I'm not holding my breath, but folks, that's really what's going to take for us to be delivered from this process.
Well, don't you think, though, Dean, that there are many, many teachers out there who see what's going on in the educational system, and they're just totally disillusioned. They're disillusioned because they can't discipline. They're disillusioned because they can't really teach the way they want to. They can't teach the absolutes, the right and the wrong, the math, the physics, they can't even teach our children how to read well. They have to use alternative reading concepts rather than the phonics, which is really seminal to an intelligent approach to reading. It's not that all the teachers are bad, it's just that there are a few of them who are either because of stupidity or because of their lack of any spiritual feeling have gone over to the dark side and really do want to corrupt the youth. But that's not the majority of teachers.
First of all, the administrators are the key to this whole thing. That's why they facilitated administrators first thing off the bat, because they have to control them to control the teachers. I have spoken communities where superintendents were there in the meeting. They only last about halfway through this presentation. They know what I'm saying is true, and they just scurry out of there as quick as they can halfway through because they don't want to meet anybody at the end of this thing, presentation. But I've met superintendents who, when they see teachers teaching instead of facilitating. And in other words, they get the kids in the circles. That's facilitation. They get them in rows and teach the facts. That's teaching. And if that teacher comes back from in-service training as a facilitator, if that superintendent, by the way, some of them require all the doors open so they can walk up and down and make sure that facilitator's facilitating. But if that facilitator turns to a teacher, they will actually stand outside and beat on the walls of that classroom until that teacher becomes a facilitator again. And I am hearing, as I speak across this country, horror stories. Teachers are in living hell under harassment, and the community hasn't the foggiest idea. And I really say shame on the news media. They refuse to do any investigation on what's going on. And a lot of these folks go to church, and they claim to be Christians, and they refuse to dig deep past just the shallow, impressive information that these facilitators give them. And look at the dirtiness that's going on.
Well, I think that you have, I'm sure you well understand that the media in America is controlled. And if reporters, certainly in many newspapers, tell the truth, either their story will be spiked or they won't have a job. They're not interested in reporting the news and investigative journalism. They're interested in concealing truth from the people. Because if that were not the case, the people would understand what was going on.